Religious liberty. Christians engaging the media. The for you of Christianity. Christian marriage. The sexual revolution. The Benedict option. These are some of the topics for the 2017 Fall Issues Etc. Making the Case Conference, Friday, November 10th and Saturday, November 11th in Houston, Texas. Find out more at issuesetc.org. Registration is $120. The Issues Etc. Making the Case Conference, November 10th and 11th in Houston.
It's always a little bit creepy whenever a large conglomerate of a bunch of big Fortune 500 companies come together and start to dictate bathroom policies.
More and more, God's word is showing up less and less in evangelical preaching.
Every person is going to see something wrong with their pastor. Now, why has the Lord let you see that wrong thing about your pastor? The answer is so that you can pray for them.
Every sin is a form of unbelief, where we do not believe that God's going to take care of us like he takes care of the birds in the air and the flowers in the field.
This is Chaplain Colonel Philip Hauser calling to say that all Christian patriots love doing push-ups while listening to Issues, etc. Carry on.
If you know the name of any city in Germany and you're a Lutheran, you probably know the name of this town. You wouldn't be able to find it on a map, perhaps. It's not a large city at all. Although this year, the 500th anniversary of the Reformation, it is projected to entertain over 2 million visitors. Wittenberg is kind of the center of the Reformation geographically. Why is that? What was it about this town itself that, other than the presence of Martin Luther, what was it about this town that made it the epicenter of the Reformation? Greetings and welcome to Issues Etc., coming to you from the Old Latin School in Wittenberg, Germany, on this Tuesday afternoon, August the 1st. I'm Todd Wilkin. Thanks for tuning us in. We're going to be talking about Wittenberg and the Reformation with Dr. Martin Troy, administrator of the Luther Society. In hour two of Issues Etc., Professor John Pless joins us to talk about the Small Catechism as your prayer book. Joining us to talk about Wittenberg and the Reformation on this Tuesday afternoon, Dr. Martin Troy. He's administrator of the Luther Society, longtime curator of exhibits at Luther Memorial Foundation in Saxony-Anhalt, Germany, and author of several books, including Wittenberg, The Town of Martin Luther, and Martin Luther in Wittenberg, A Biographical Tour. Dr. Troy, welcome back to Issues, Etc.
Hi.
I know what the city looks like now, but what did this city look like in the 16th century?
Well, we have at least two schools of thinking. One, the Roman Catholic, of course, explained that this is really a one-horse town, not worth to be named a town in the German understanding of a city. And of course, the other school of thinking included Luther, who compared Wittenberg to Bethlehem, a very small city with a great history. So it all depends a bit on the way you look at it. Historical scene. The story starts earlier in 1485. At that time, the two ruling Saxon princes, the Duke Ernest and the Duke Albert, decided that they would break up their common government. And so they separated, and two parts of Saxony came into being. Ernest the Older, of course, got Wittenberg, because since medieval times, Wittenberg was connected with the electorate. And so he had to take the eastern part of Saxony, which lacked two things, a residence and a university, both were traditionally in Leipzig or in Dresden. And the second special point about this Saxon prince, and especially his son, who came into ruling just 1 year later, Frederick the Wise, was that those Saxon princes had money from the silver mining in the ore mountains. You know, the typical German prince at that time is high-sounding titles, big ambitions, and no cash. And those Saxons were different, especially as Frederick did never that war during his lifetime. Also very untypical for the princes of that time.
So he didn't have to spend money making war?
No, he did not spend money on warfare, on militaries, on things like that. So he could spend it on culture and education. And this is why he decided not only to set up his residence in Wittenberg, building himself a new castle, by the way, setting up his collection of relics, one of the largest north of the Alps. In the end, around 1520, he had more than 5,500 relics, including things like the Tomb of St. Anna, a straw from the crib of baby Jesus, and a whole body of a mummified baby of the evil King Herod had slaughtered in Bethlehem. You see, he was a very pious prince. And this is most pertinent for the Reformation history, he decided to set up his own university in 1502. And this university was costly, and he paid the highest salaries in all Middle Germany. And so students from all over Germany and also from Europe came to Wittenberg. At that time, the university had around 450 students. Doesn't sound much, but the whole town did not have more than 2,000 inhabitants. This explains why, at least during Luther's times, Wittenberg was not a town having a university, but a university having a town.
So what was it? That's what it was before. When the university is established, and let's skip ahead. We'll talk about the intervening years in a moment. After the Reformation, after 1580, after the Book of Concord has been published, what has changed in Wittenberg by that time?
The interesting point is that after Luther's death in 1546, and even Melanchthon's death, who is much more important for the university, in 1560, nothing changed. Contrary to that, more and more students came to Wittenberg. And so around in the 1580s, there was the old-time high of student numbers, namely 3,500 in the town of then 4,500. We have two very good examples to show you how important for European education the Wittenberg University was at that time. Wittenberg had more students than the Sorbonne in Paris. We are extraordinarily proud of that. But there are two points. If you remember Shakespeare, Hamlet, coming to Helsinki, where does he come from? Wittenberg, of course. So the London viewers knew in 1605 that Wittenberg was the place to be educated. And something not literary, but historical. In 1598, one of the most important lecturers at the artist faculty was Giordano Bruno. Now, Bruno was a heretic from every point of view. And of course, the theological faculty tried to oust him. But the artist kept him because he drew students. This gives you an idea that far from being just a theological seminary, the Wittenberg Lutheran University encompassed the whole of the educational tradition of early modern times.
How influential was Philip Melanchthon in putting the University of Wittenberg on the map the way he did, that even, as you say, it was known?
Melanchthon and his pupils were really the reason why Wittenberg became the most important university in the 16th century Europe. He was very, very famous, and this is easy to understand. Luther just taught theology. From the statutes of the university, it was expected that students got an artistic degree before they could change to the theological faculty. Only a very small minority did that. So, of course, students did listen to the lectures of Luther. But the teacher, the person from whom the students got what they needed for their offices, was, of course, Melanchthon. Also, he was nearer in age to his pupils. And he built up a kind of school, not only for Wittenberg, but for the German universities, at least in North and East. The people who had studied with Melanchthon were qualified for leading positions, even outside the empire, if you look at Sweden or Denmark.
One thing that people first visiting Wittenberg might notice, we are sitting right now at the old Latin school, and right across from us is the city church, the state church, St. Mary's. But I could probably throw a ball and at least run it into the castle church, just, if I'm not mistaken, just east of us. And they might ask, why two churches so close together in such a small town?
It's west of us.
West of us, thank you. Yeah, the sun is going down over there.
Actually, the town church is what the name says, the place of worship for the citizens of Wittenberg. When the prince established his residence, his castle, at the western corner of the town, of course he needed his private chapel. And this is rather huge for a chapel. But this is how the princes at that time thought, doing the great lines, especially because they needed it for the relic collection, at least Frederick the Wise. He founded a lot of masses. Every day you had 13 spoken masses and 9 sung ones. They burned 13,600 candles a year. So that gives you an idea of how religion functioned in pre-Reformation times. And of course, after the death of Frederick, his brother John took over, but his residence was in Weimar. And so the Castle Church really became without function. It was used for the university, which was disbanded in 1817. Later on, it was used for the stationed military. But in the end, nobody really knew what to do with the Castle Church. Today, it's mostly a monument. A monument to the Prussian view on the Reformation history from the 19th century.
We'll talk more about that on the other side of the break. Dr. Martin Troy is our guest. We're talking about Wittenberg and the Reformation on this Tuesday afternoon, August the 1st. He's administrator of the Luther Society, longtime curator of exhibits at Luther Memorial Foundation in Saxony-Anhalt, Germany, and he's author of several books, including Wittenberg, The Town of Martin Luther, and Martin Luther in Wittenberg, a biographical tour. When we come back, we'll talk about how Martin Luther himself came to this town and what he would have found here. Stay tuned.
We know that you want to build your family on the right foundation from the very start, the foundation of Jesus Christ. Concordia Publishing House offers more than 8,000 products for churches, schools, and homes, dedicated customer service, and an experienced staff to help you focus on what matters most. Click to connect at cph.org. Concordia Publishing House, listening, responding, providing for God's people. Concordia Publishing House, cph.org.
Why are there 4 Gospels? What happens to unborn babies when they die? What does it mean to fear God? Find faithful, Bible-based answers to tough theological questions when you read the August issue of The Lutheran Witness, a magazine of the Lutheran Church Missouri Synod. Visit cph.org/trylutheranwitness to get 6 issues for only $6.99. The Lutheran Witness, interpreting the contemporary world from a Lutheran perspective.
Expert guests, expansive topics, extolling Christ. You're listening to Issues Etc.
I like to think of the deaconess vocation as driven by two things, the love of Christ and the needs of our neighbor.
Issues Etc. regular guest, Dr. James Buescher, Director of Deaconess Studies at Concordia Theological Seminary, Fort Wayne, Indiana, on the vocation of deaconess.
First, the deaconess is moved by the love of Christ, who came not to be served, but to serve. Yet I think we can also see the profound needs around us, broken families, loneliness, despair. Deaconesses help the church to become a true family that manifests the love of Christ in our love for one another, and especially for those in need.
For more information on the Deaconess Studies program at Concordia Theological Seminary, Fort Wayne, Indiana, visit ctsfw.edu or call Concordia Theological Seminary at 1-800-481-2155, 800-481-2155.
Welcome back to Issues Etc. I'm Todd Wilkin. We're talking about Wittenberg and the Reformation. Dr. Martin Troy is our guest. We're broadcasting from the Old Latin School in Wittenberg, Germany. Dr. Troy, off mic just a moment ago, you were explaining the original purpose of the university. You said not to educate theological students or even a liberal arts education, but for law. Why was that?
This is a time where bureaucracy in the modern sense is being developed at the different courts. The forerunner was, by the way, Rome and the Papal Church. Everything had to be put in writing, everything had to be played after the legal rules of the Roman law. For this you needed specialists. And, of course, if you educated them on their own university, they would be your people, especially as the printers, for instance, could maybe read, but not Latin. And so they had to trust their advisors. And this, of course, would be best if they could be taken from their own university.
This was for the electors, then, a school of government.
Exactly. I think this is very aptly put. The main intention at the beginning was a school of government. At the same time, of course, should this university be bigger, more important than the one in Leipzig or the one in Erfurt? The question of prestige is very important to the princes at that time.
How did Martin Luther come to be a student here in Wittenberg?
Actually, he wasn't a student here. He was a teacher, and he came here very much against his own will. You see, what's the point in being a monk? A monk is like a soldier. He has to obey orders. The difference being that a monk is expected to love his orders. Luther was very happy in studying and teaching in Erfurt, a very famous and renowned university with a long tradition. But when his superior decided that he needed somebody bright-eyed and bushy-tailed here in Wittenberg, Luther couldn't talk back and had to move from Erfurt here to Wittenberg. Going back in 1511 for 1 year and then being promoted to doctor here in 1512. This is a very, very important date for him, because later on, when he became the well-known reformer, not only other people asked him, but he asked himself, am I alone right? Are all others wrong and I am alone right? And in this question, the big consolation was his doctoral degree, because he had sworn an oath to fight for the true evangelical doctrine.
So he comes as a instructor here, and there are other bright lights as instructors here as well. Was Karlstadt here already as an instructor in the university?
Karlstadt really was his doctoral father, and also important is the name of Nikolaus Amsdorf, later the reformer in Magdeburg, and apparently Luther's best friend. Under Hoegel, it's important that there were a lot of very talented, very young people, all in the middle of 30s, at the university, which had not long-standing traditions. You know what's killing educational institutions? We did it always this way, we never did it this way, and there could be every come. Yeah? And in Wittenberg, everything was new. So there was no established, long-standing tradition. And Luther and his friends could try out new things. They could establish their preference for the biblical texts and the church fathers over the scholastical authors. They could establish their interest in the original texts, studying Greek and Hebrew. All those things already started before the prince of the university, Philip Melanchthon, came to Wittenberg in 1518.
Well, that was going to be my question, because usually Melanchthon is the one who is credited with sending everyone back to the sources, this classic humanist approach to education. But this was already fomenting in the university by the time he arrived.
The vocation of Melanchthon to Wittenberg is already a result of the ongoing reform. And of course, he was the mastermind of the reform, and his inaugural address became very famous and established him. He just was 21 years old as an authority at the university, and for the long years to come, he really drew the students. Luther became, at least after 1530, more and more a monument of himself, not very approachable. Melanchthon was not only the teacher, he was also the friend of the students. And so, as I told you, people went to his lectures, but keep in mind, he lectured from 1535 to 1545, 10 long years about Genesis. If you have the money for just 3 or 4 semesters, would you spend your time on Genesis? You spend your time on learning Latin, maybe Greek, and philosophy, and how to preach and teach. So, of course, you would call yourself a pupil of Luther, but in reality, all those were Melanchthon students.
Let's talk about the other places here in Wittenberg that are strongly associated with the Reformation, beginning with what had been the monastery, if I'm not mistaken, and became the house for the Luther family.
The Black Monastery, black after the habits of the monk, is also a result of the prince elector spending money. He built the monastery in 1504 to drew students, monk students, from all over Germany. And so between 25 to 40 monks lived there, all studying here at the Wittenberg University. When the Reformation started, the monks went home. I mean, the monastery was not dissolved or anything. People just left. And when Luther came back from the Wartburg, there was just the prior left. And he also went away, and so the large building stood empty, only filled with life after Luther's marriage in 1525. And of course, his wife is one of the most remarkable persons of the Wittenberg history, Reformation history. She was not his housewife. She was the CEO of a middling enterprise called the Luther Incorporated and PLC. And she did all the things to keep him alive, and at the same time, she made a lot of money out of the student hostel. In the end, she earned as much as he, as a professor.
I'm intrigued by this picture of a Wittenberg after 1530 or so, where Luther is kind of, as you said, a monument of himself. His wife is running the family business, and then the university is proceeding on its own. I want to talk about that when we come back from this break. Martin Luther's role in kind of making the city of Wittenberg and the Reformation. We're broadcasting live from the Old Latin School in Wittenberg, Germany. Dr. Martin Troy is our guest. He's authored several books, including Wittenberg, the Town of Martin Luther, and Martin Luther in Wittenberg, a biographical tour. You can find a link to both of those at our website, issuesetc.org. You'll find them there. When we come back, we're going to talk about Luther kind of making the town during the time of the Reformation. What was his role in this town other than university professor, preacher, and otherwise?
Join Mark and Molly Hemingway, Brian Wolfmiller, Rod Dreher, Jennifer Roback Morse, Scott Murray, and me for the 2017 Fall Issues Etc. Making the Case Conference, Friday, November 10th and Saturday, November 11th in Houston, Texas. Registration is $120. For more information, visit issuesetc.org. The Issues Etc. Making the Case Conference, November 10th and 11th in Houston.
And they won't ask me questions.
Have you been too busy to get your associate's, bachelor's, or master's degree? Concordia University, Wisconsin offers 50 online educational options. Find out more at issuesetc.org. Click the Concordia University online logo and enter the program code ISSUES to waive your application fee. Concordia University, Wisconsin is here to strengthen and support the church. Lifelong Lutheran learning. issuesetc.org and click Concordia University, Wisconsin online.
Metro East Lutheran High School in Edwardsville, Illinois engages young adults in a Christ-centered environment, delivering academic excellence and spiritual growth to develop Christian leaders for tomorrow. We provide a Christ-focused alternative to public high schools. Many of our students receive tuition assistance. To help us provide tuition assistance to more students, go to melhs.org and click on the giving page. Or call me, Dr. J. Krause, principal, at 618-656-0043.
At Concordia University Irvine, you can pursue advanced theological study for academic, professional, or personal development. Concordia's Master of Arts in Theology program is grounded in the truth of Scripture and insights from the Lutheran Confessions. Courses are taught online and at intensive on-campus sessions in the summer. Apologetics, Christian education leadership, and Reformation studies are just a few of the emphases offered. For more information, visit cui.edu/theology.
Educating a new generation of Lutherans, you're listening to Issues Etc.
Athanasius, Bishop of Alexandria in the 4th century, was known for boldly confessing Jesus Christ as both true God and true man. This is what we do at St. Athanasius Lutheran Church in Vienna, Virginia, just outside Washington, D.C., continuing this historic confession of our Savior, who died for us and now comes to us in word and sacrament. If you live in the D.C. area or just visiting, come join us. For more information, find us on the web, St. Athanasius Lutheran Church.
Celebrate the 500th anniversary of the Reformation with the new Martin Luther plush figure. It features the 16th century reformer holding the Bible and Luther's morning and evening prayers. Go to reformationgear.com, use the coupon code ISSUESETC, and 20% of your purchase will help support the worldwide outreach of Issues Etc. reformationgear.com, the new Martin Luther plush figure, reformationgear.com, and enter the coupon code ISSUESETC.
Welcome back to Issues Etc. We're talking about Wittenberg and the Reformation, broadcasting from the Old Latin School in Wittenberg, Germany. On this Tuesday, August the 1st, Dr. Martin Troy is our guest. Dr. John Pless will be with us in the second hour of the program. We'll be talking about Luther's Small Catechism as your prayer book. This picture of Luther as it is interesting to note him preaching on Genesis for 10 full years. He was kind of allowed to focus on something that greatly interested him, obviously. In this town then, during the time of Luther's life, what role did he take on here? He obviously was a celebrity in Europe by this time. What would you say about that?
He was teaching Genesis for 10 years, not preaching. And, of course, he still was the town preacher, even if he was not the pastor of the town. That was John Bugenhagen. So it's a misunderstanding to see his household as the first evangelical household of an evangelical pastor. He was a university professor, first and foremost. And this also means that he was not very well connected with the people in the town. Philip Melanchthon had married the daughter of a local person who became even mayor of Wittenberg. So he was much nearer to the town establishment. And interestingly, also, the number of students that came from Wittenberg is quite small. So the university, which had its own rules and its own laws, you know, was a kind of extraterritorial entity within the town. It's quite possible that students came here without having any connections to the Wittenbergers, with the exception, of course, that they made quite a lot of money out of housing the students and feeding them, and of course, especially preparing their beer. This means that the university was important for the local economy. But on the whole, Luther saw himself never as a citizen. As a preacher, he was somebody in authority towards the local citizens.
Why did the city of Wittenberg hire him to be the preacher? What was the distinction there between Bugenhagen as pastor of the town, and why did they feel the need to have a town preacher like Luther?
The most important point most people don't understand is that this hiring happened already in 1513, long before the Reformation started.
Really?
Yeah. You can even show that not so much the 95 theses are the starting point of the Reformation, but the sermons Luther preached about the issue. And the topic of indulgences, he met first in his role as a pastor, not as a university teacher, because indulgences was not a topic to be discussed at the university. It was a topic for the normal citizen. And so the preaching role of Luther is, for the beginning of the Reformation, much more important than most people think.
So he was taking up the subject and the theology surrounding indulgences from the pulpit before he ever penned the 95 Theses and started that conversation academically.
Exactly. People came to him into confession, showing him a piece of paper and telling him, in effect, well, we don't want to confess, we want the absolution we've already paid. And so for the first time, he describes this in great detail later on. For the first time, he encounters the phenomenon of indulgences because, you know, the indulgence promulgation was not allowed in Saxony. So he did not hear about that before his flock told him about this kind of insurance.
Where were they getting the indulgences?
They went outside of the Saxon territory. Next stop would be Jüterbock, 60 kilometers north of here. Where the famous Tetzel was promoting the indulgences in 1516. So Luther himself explains that at the beginning he did not know what indulgences meant, but he was sure that the understanding of his flock, they believed that they had bought an insurance, not a life insurance, but an afterlife insurance, yeah? That this was deeply wrong. And if he would not take some stand, he would share the future of his flock. This was his task as a town preacher. And this is the beginning, really, of the Indulgence Crisis.
How often was he preaching as town preacher?
It depends a bit on the time of the year, but on Easter or Christmas, he would preach two times a day for 3, 4, 5 succeeding days. It can, in some years, we have sermons between 50 and 150. Not all of them survived, because he did not have a manuscript. He just had some notes when preaching, and all those sermons we have today were written down or noted down by students or listeners.
So talk a bit about Luther's life here in Wittenberg. What was, not far from here, people can visit the place. What are they seeing there when they go to the Luther House? Are they seeing things, obviously 500 years have passed, but are they seeing things as close to as they were when Luther and his family lived there?
Surely not, because the building that's now beside the street, a large one with three floors, was only erected in 1580. And also in the 1580s and in the 1860s, some deep changes were made in the structure of the Luther House. And I think what a visitor today would notice first would be the smell. Because they kept pigs there and cows, quite a lot of them, the largest number in Wittenberg. The former chapel of the hospital, Luther converted into a pigsty. Of course, this means that you had a very agricultural outlook when visiting the most famous heretic of his time.
Hmm. So when Luther likes to refer to his opponent sometimes with that kind of agricultural insults, he could just look out the window and see what he was talking about, more or less.
The family was one of the largest agriculture entrepreneurs, Katie was, in Wittenberg, because the business idea was to produce your own foodstuff for the students as paying guests. If you buy those things on the market, you don't make a profit. But if you produce it yourself, there's a tidy sum in it. And so they kept the pigs and the cows, and they did their own grain and their own vegetables. They even had a small fish pond. It was quite diverse what they were doing there. But on the other hand, you have to keep in mind that had nothing to do with Luther. If you look at his work, you can see that statistically he wrote 2,500 pages a year, every year. And it's, they'll try only to do this by hand without the task of inventing it all. And so this explains, beside his preaching and his teaching and his journeys, that he was during days on and on, not with his family at all. He spent really days in his studio. And so all we hear about his family life and his excursions and things like that, this is only because it's so seldom, so rare, that he was not sitting at his desk writing or teaching at the university or preaching in the town church. This explains, we get a wrong picture when we look too much at Luther in his free time. Normally he didn't have any.
What drove him to that, to write thousands of pages every year? What do you think?
It's quite clear, because he explained it to everybody. the knowledge that the world will come to an end. Not during his lifetime, but very shortly afterwards. And so it was his personal task as a prophet to proclaim the gospel to everybody, that nobody could be excused, meaning that he did not have heard about the message of the gospel.
Dr. Martin Troy is our guest. We're broadcasting from the Old Latin School in Wittenberg, Germany on this Tuesday afternoon, August the 1st. And we're talking about Wittenberg and the Reformation. 10 more minutes with Dr. Troy. Then Dr. John Pless will join us to talk about Martin Luther's Small Catechism as a prayer book.
For 28 years, I had the privilege of serving as a chaplain in the United States Navy.
Dr. Dan Gard, retired Rear Admiral and President of Concordia University Chicago, on the need for military chaplains.
During that time, I was able to bring word and sacrament to so many young people and their families, our sons and daughters spread throughout the world. Truly a privilege and an honor, and today, there are other chaplains that must follow. We need more LCMS chaplains in all branches of the military. It's an incredible, amazing mission opportunities to go to places no other pastor can go, but to go with the same tools that any other pastor brings wherever he goes, word and sacrament.
You can find out more about the vocation of military chaplain at lcms.org/armed forces, the LCMS ministry to the armed forces, lcms.org/armed forces.
Education and edification. You're listening to Issues Etc.
Ever attended an Issues Etc. conference or any number of events that take place across the Synod and wondered why more people from your congregation aren't there? Then check out the special seminar package the CLCC is offering for the 500th anniversary. All you need so your circuit can prepare, promote, and present a seminar that will appeal to all the members of your congregation, provided for free by the CLCC. Just go to theclcc.org. theclcc.org and click on the blue box or check us out on Facebook.
I bet you didn't know that the teaching of Latin in schools is making a comeback. Latin? Really? Isn't that a dead language? Well, take a look at what studies say about how well Latin students do on a test like the SAT. Memoria Press's Latin program will revolutionize your students' vocabulary, knowledge, and their understanding of grammar. And there is no better subject for teaching critical thinking skills. Visit memoriapress.com and save $5 on your next order by using the coupon code LPR.
Are you tired of working nights, weekends, and odd hours trying to cover your bases at home just to make ends meet? At the Cleaning Authority, we call that the multi-job shuffle, and we want to end that for you right now. We'll train you in our proven, efficient cleaning methods, and you'll be partnered to work in pre-qualified homes. Call 314-416-8117 and walk away from the multi-job shuffle with a future in our St. Louis office. 314-416-8117.
Welcome back to Issues Etc. I'm Todd Wilkin. We're talking about Wittenberg and the Reformation with Dr. Martin Troy from the Old Latin School in Wittenberg, Germany. Dr. Troy, you mentioned earlier in our conversation that the Castle Church, so strongly associated with the Reformation, has become, in essence, in the intervening centuries, a monument to Reformed theology, not to Lutheran theology. How did that come about?
One of the most important dates in the history of Wittenberg is the year 1817 in the Congress of Vienna. The former Saxon territory of Wittenberg and the surrounding areas became Prussian. And the Prussians furnished anew the traditional fortress at the river, and at the same time they disbanded the traditional university. It was merged with one another. And they established also the first preacher seminary as a secondary educational movement for pastors in Germany, but seen as a whole, the long-standing educational tradition of Wittenberg came to an end. At the same time, during the 19th century, the Prussians who were a member of the Union Church, because the Hohenzollern originally were from the Reformed denomination, decided that they should care for the monuments left over from the Reformation. So the Black Monastery, which was in a very bad shape, was restored in the middle of the 19th century. Melanchthon's living quarters, which was owned privately, was turned into a memorial room, and the largest project being the castle church, which was destroyed down to the fundaments in 1760 during the war between Prussia and the imperial forces.
So nothing what we see standing today is original, except for perhaps the foundation stones.
The foundation stones are original. Everything else is the imagination of a Prussian king, Frederick III, how a Saxon Reformation cathedral should look like in the end of the 19th century. And the same is true for the exhibit, you have to call it an exhibit, in the inside of the Catholic Church, with the exception of the grave markers of Luther and Melanchthon and the Prince Electors Frederick and John. Nothing is left from the original pieces of the Catholic Church. What you've got now is a collection of statues of the reformers. Those are the first order. Second, you get small round portraits, that's the second order, including Zwingli and Calvin beneath the organ. The third is coat of arms of the important families who promoted the Reformation, and the last order are the towns which coat of arms are in the glass windows. So you can read this as a kind of understanding of what was happening in the 16th century from a Prussian point of the 19th century. Especially beautiful is the throne William II, the German emperor, our dear Kaiser, had made himself directly opposite to the Luther statue. So you have the union of throne and altar in a way pictured, which I think you don't get anywhere else in such clearness.
So to the chagrin of every Lutheran pastor who has stood there and gazed at the pulpit there or to the other places there and thought, this is where Luther preached his sermon. It may be the same location, generally speaking, but not the same structure whatsoever.
Same place, totally different thinking.
What do we have any idea about the original structure of that church, what stood there first and what it would have looked like as opposed to what it looks like today?
We have a woodcut by Lucas Cranach showing the outside of the castle church, explaining also the shape of the tower. Most people associate that with a Prussian Pickelhaube, but this is wrong. In reality, it's a Renaissance home, because this is not a church tower, it's a tower of the fortress, of the castle. The second piece of evidence is a drawing done shortly before the catastrophe of 1760, which gives us an insight of how much works of art were stationed there, Dürer altars, Cranach paintings, things like that. And then we have some reconstructions from digs in the 19th century.
When did Wittenberg as a town then become the tourist center that it is today for those who are interested in the Reformation? When did people begin to visit this town saying, I want to see this, where this happened and where that happened?
the first inscription book in which people could write their name when they visited the Luther room at the Black Monastery dates back to 1672.
Wow.
One of the oldest in Germany. And in the early 19th century, we have already quite a lot of Americans visiting Wittenberg, mostly German immigrants who made it stateside and then came back on tour. There's a famous verse, "If Luther had not lived here, I wouldn't have been here," written down in one of those books. And from the founding of the museum in 1883, we have a starting point of a Luther tourism which accelerated in the time after 1918.
And why did it accelerate to that degree? Simply people's ability to travel and come and see?
This is really a good question, and I think there are a lot of answers to that. Surely there is something like a Protestant pilgrimage. People want to feel, touch, see the original sites. Especially important that they are the original sites, which is not something very new. If you look at the desk in the Luther room, you see that people cut off a lot of pieces already in the 17th and 18th century. People believed that it would good against toothaches. Newer times, I think it's also a cultural history interest, and it has something to do with the understanding of the forming of European history. And surely what also helped is the including in the UNESCO Heritage List in 1995.
What is the most interesting place to see in Wittenberg, in your opinion? And what is the most interesting place that people don't usually want to see here in Wittenberg that you think they should see?
Of course, having worked so long for the Luther Memorial Foundation, I'm biased. And so I'm pretty sure that the most important place is the Luther Room in the Black Monastery. And at the same time, under the roof of that same building, there's an exhibit showing the development of the Luther images from the 16th to the 20th century. Most people don't visit there because apparently it's too much of a muchness in the exhibit there. But in my opinion, this is very important because then you get an historical correct idea how the historic Luther is not at all the same as the Luther we handle today.
In your opinion, if he could walk the streets today in 2017, 500 years after the Reformation, of this little town, up and down these streets, and look at what people who visit here today are seeing, what do you think Luther's first reaction would be?
Actually, he wouldn't walk aimlessly the streets, because if he would venture outside, he had a purpose. And so he wouldn't care very much about those people. Of course, in his later days, there were important people who visited him in the Black Monastery. Just afterwards, to brag, "I've seen the great man." And he took this as a Christian. You know, doesn't mean that you like it. But on the whole, he would recognize the town structure. This did not change over the centuries. He would surely not recognize the buildings. And of course, this is a question that I want to put to you and to your listeners. What do you think, which church would he join today?
That's a good way to end. Dr. Martin Troy is administrator of the Luther Society, longtime curator of exhibits at Luther Memorial Foundation in Saxony-Anhalt, Germany, and author of several books, including Wittenberg, The Town of Martin Luther, and Martin Luther in Wittenberg, A Biographical Tour. Dr. Troy, thank you very much for being our guest. In Hour 2 of Issues, Etc., from the Old Latin School in Wittenberg, Germany, on this Tuesday, August the 1st, we're going to be talking with Professor John Pless of Concordia Theological Seminary in Fort Wayne, Indiana, talking about Luther's Small Catechism as your prayer book. He's author of Praying Luther's Small Catechism, The Pattern of Sound Words. That's Hour 2 of Issues, Etc., next.
Listen weekday afternoons to Pastor Todd Wilkin and guests on Issues Etc. Issues Etc. is a listener-supported program. Your financial support is vital for the continuation and expansion of this worldwide outreach. Our mailing address, Issues Etc., P.O. Box 83, Collinsville, Illinois, 62234. Box 83, Collinsville, Illinois, 62234. You can also donate at our website, issuesetc.org. Issues Etc. is a production of LPR, Lutheran Public Radio.
The third commandment teaches us to remember the Sabbath day by keeping it holy. We do this when we hold God's word sacred and gladly hear and learn it. Jesus invites the weak and heavy laden to rest in him, our true rest, because his yoke is easy and his burden is light. This weekend, rest in Jesus as you hear his word and receive his gifts. If you are in Southern Illinois, you're invited to join Trinity Lutheran Church in Millstadt to rest in the grace of our Savior, Jesus Christ. Learn more at trinitymillstadt.org.
Your pastor has been called to shepherd you as a member of Christ's flock. Doxology offers an innovative program of advanced study retreats where your pastor can be refreshed, renewed, and refocused. Find out more at doxology.us. Many pastors report that doxology has been one of the most valuable learning experiences since seminary. Doxology, the Lutheran Center for Spiritual Care and Counsel. Doxology.us. Doxology.us.